You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
This week on The Dan Nichols Show, we go golfing with a young talent who has got very much the highs and lows of the game with which to share. As a young star, he caught the attention of the golfing world as somebody who was not likely to, but was definitely going to win dozens of majors. He was that good as a kid, and initially it looked like he was certainly heading that way. Wins not just on the Sunshine Tour, but also the DP World Tour, an electric young talent with the world at his feet. But sport generally is not a sentimental beast, and golf in particular is not, and he has discovered since those highs that this can also be a very cruel sport indeed. Happily, he's now back on his feet, he's heading in the right direction, and having recently played with him, I had a reminder of just how good he is. My guest on the Dan Nichols Show this week, two-time DP World Tour winner, Hayden Portis.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me on the show. No thank you, though, for golf the other day, because we played in a Sunshine Tour event together where the format was a scramble drive. And if you're not au fait with golfing terminology, this means you take the best shot from one player off the tee and everybody then hits their ball from that same space. And on probably eight occasions, I hit what might have been the single greatest drive of my life. This explosive soaring shot off the tee as my TaylorMade QI4D driver broke new territory and disappeared over the horizon. And then you would step up with this slightly smug grin and with this rather relaxed swing of yours, hit the ball 140 yards. And I measured this past my drive. So I've now actually given up golf and I've taken up lawn bowls for the remainder of my career.
Yeah, at least you don't have to throw a ball too far. So, yeah, I think you might have me in that department.
It was enormously good fun, though, and it was a really nice opportunity to spend time both with you on the course, and also we had a lovely time a little earlier in the day. You were chatting on stage to John Smith about a golf career that showcases part of the journey that not everybody always sees, because we tend to see Sunday afternoon and the trophy and the big check, and if it's the PGA Tour, the interchangeable model wife who all seem to come from the same factory fantastic, there we go, this is a great, successful, glamorous space. And yet there is so much of golf that is anything but, and you have experienced all of that, but you also experienced the highs as you came through this career that started as a youngster. And I've spoken to a number of people who watched you at St. Stithians, and it wasn't just golf. The young Hayden was an athlete of considerable ability in lots of different sports, but there was just something about golf that caught you and said, right, this is where I'm going to try and make it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it was, you know, at the time it was a difficult sort of decision to make as a kid. You know, what type of sport do I want to play for the rest of my life or for my career? And golf just seemed like a really good fit. I felt like, you know, you were in charge of your own destiny, and, you know, if you put the work in and do the right things, then you're looking good to become something worth being. So, I decided to go with golf. And
How much did you have to decide? Were you a little AB de Villiers who could also do synchronized swimming and throw the javelin and world class at dominoes and just do absolutely everything? Were you kind of in that space?
Yeah, I was, you know, provincial in three sports at the same time.
So golf?
Golf, cricket, and soccer.
Okay. Holding midfielder, ranging left wing.
Yeah, I was sort of your sweeper, maybe central defense to midfield.
Sort of a young Declan Rice.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'd like to think I passed forward a bit more than him. That's a dig to the Arsenal fans. Golf was it's a strange beast, as you say. You know, you get highs and lows, and you know, when you think you've got it, that's when golf decides that it's got a different plan for you. And I think that's why I loved the game. I did show a lot of potential at a very young age.
My potential as a young golfer was mostly shown when I emerged from the course with a minimum number of balls lost and there weren't too many double figures in the scorecard. I've seen golfers at this kind of early to mid teenage level, where they just clearly are at another level and the game just comes annoyingly easily and you're hitting it longer than everybody and you're finding greens and you're putting. And it can be, I think, quite easy at the start of a career to both get slightly carried away yourself, but also to have friends and family and in particular parents carried away as their pension fund starts to materialize before them. So how was that journey of understanding, yep, I'm quite good, but how good am I really? And how do I translate, well, I think I am quite good, into can this actually work as a career?
It's strange. A lot of people do ask me that question. I didn't really put a lot of thought into that. I think when you enjoy something, you don't really feel like you need to push yourself or look towards others to become better. I just wanted to become better. I wanted to go practice. And, obviously, when I started winning golf tournaments, I knew, okay, I have some pretty good talent here, but it was never a sort of decision to carry on becoming better. It was just something that just happened naturally. As you say, when you start off so young, it almost becomes like second nature. I lived in Prague, and you see kids ice skating, before they can even walk. It's quite something to see. And, that's the way it kind of felt for me. It just felt very natural.
Prague is very important, and we're going to come to that in a moment, but you wouldn't have got to Prague without the journey that took you into professional golf. At what point do you start thinking, the amateur golf's going pretty well, I'm starting to win things, people are starting to talk about me, is professional golf maybe what I could be doing? And then how difficult is it to pull the trigger and decide, yep, I'm actually going to back myself and give this a go?
Yeah, I had pretty good opportunities to go to America to go study. The classroom wasn't my forte, to say the least.
There are a lot of St. Cydian's teachers listening to this nodding and going, yeah, we agree with that.
Yeah. And, it wasn't that I was bad. I just had no interest in it. I made a decision very young that, being a sportsman was what I wanted to do in my life. And when it came to the decision of going to university or turning pro was what I did. And I started on the Sunshine Tour. I actually hit the ground running quite early, and I had a good opportunity to win the Zimbabwean Open. Unfortunately, I can't remember who I lost to. I think it was JB Kruger. He had a pretty good final round, and mine was quite slow. And then, I ended up winning Rookie of the Year that season. And, as I said earlier in our chat at the Gathering of Greatness, I didn't have to think about it. It just kind of happened, And obviously, with the maturity over the years, you start to think about all these different things, and when you start to think as a golfer, that's when the trouble begins.
That's certainly my problem when that happens. The kickoff went really well. You're Rookie of the Year, as you say. You've got a lot of people going, right, this is the next big thing. And I think from the many times this has come up in interviews and conversations I've heard with you, that process and navigating it was made a lot easier because you had some terrific support. And in particular, the person who you mention every single time, and that's your father. And fathers, parents in golf can be horrible creatures. Yes. And we've seen this over the years, but they can also be the most important. And I think when that balance between supporting but also letting you be your own person is struck, that's when you have the ideal space. And I never met your father, sadly, but all I hear is what an extraordinary influence he was on not just Hayden the golfer, but on Hayden the person.
Yeah, he was an incredible man, and he was, to be honest, the greatest man I've ever known. He was quite hard on me. I wouldn't say he was forceful. He was hard on me in ways that it wasn't about, good or bad golf. It was more sort of the approach that I had to golf. If things weren't going great and, I would hang my head, that's when he would start getting unhappy just on the fact that, you know, he didn't like to see me give up or not try. That was the only time I ever saw him angry with me. If I played badly and stayed positive and kept trying, he had no problem with that. And I think he taught me some very valuable lessons, not only for the golf course, but for life as well.
And lessons that were to become even more valuable when the highs were replaced by times that weren't quite so good. But there were those great highs, and when they happened, you certainly wouldn't have known that they would then be a measure against times to come thereafter, because you did do some really cool stuff. Seeing off Xander Lombard to win the Joburg Open, DP World Tour, as well as Sunshine Tour. Was that the "I think I've made it" moment?
Yeah, That was an incredible moment for me. I'd grown up watching guys, you know, like Richard Stoney and Charles Swatzel lifting that trophy, and obviously seeing them go on to do some incredible things in the golfing world. And I felt like I was following in their footsteps, and, you know, at the time maybe didn't quite take into consideration how big it actually was and how difficult it was to actually win on the DP World. And, you know, now looking back, it was quite something.
It was a huge marker in the career. It proved to you that you could win. It also made all of South Africa sit up and take notice. And a one-off victory, well, you've won on the DP World Tour. That in itself is huge. When you get the second win, now people are going, right, this kid really is the real deal. And I think South Africans are often a little bit more impressed when it happens abroad, it happens somewhere exotic, and you're in this great field, as you were when the Czech Republic became home of your second victory.
Yeah, it's... you know, I think Joburg Open will remain, you know, my favorite victory. Czech Masters was a huge victory for sort of my psyche, my mental side, just based on the fact that, you know, I hadn't grown up playing on that type of grass, very different conditions. And being able to do that in that sort of discomfort meant a lot to me, because I think that was... you know, the time that I realized that, you know, I deserve to be here and I can keep up and compete with some of the world's best golfers.
On a tour that had some pretty big names, when you won that, you were already in a space where you're rocking up at the club for the pro-am or for the practice round, and there will have been people, I have no doubt, where you stop yourself looking at, I can't believe that's really... Who were some of those people? Who were some of those... what were some of those moments as you started finding your way onto the DP World Tour?
That was quite a shock to the system. You know, when I won Joburg Open, obviously I had no plans on what was going to happen afterwards. Next thing I knew, I was on a flight to Abu Dhabi. And, you know, I get on the range on Wednesday and I'm... you know, rubbing shoulders with Matthew Fitzpatrick, Martin Keimer, Lee Westwood, and Rory McIlroy, of course, and it felt very surreal. You know,
did you ask any of them for a selfie?
Of course, I did. It was it was just such a strange feeling. You know, these guys you see day in day out on the TV, and then for the next 2 years, I have to pinch myself and say I'm actually playing against these guys, you know. So it was quite a shock to the system, but just, you know, some of the most memorable times of my life.
And I suppose you want to revel in that and take it in. But by the same token, yes, you're Lee Westwood. Yes, you're Martin Keimer. Yes, you're Rory McIlroy. But my job is to beat you this week. And you've got to set the admiration aside and go, right, well, you know what? I'm also a DP World Tour winner and I'm here to do a job.
Yeah. And especially when you are actually playing with them in the same group as well. I was lucky enough to play with Henrik Stenson and in Dubai. And, you know, as you would as a kid going, you know, I'm going to bury this guy today, you know, just that little bit of, you know, maybe arrogance or confidence and, you know, something that I ended up, you know, sort of losing towards, you know, the later part of my DP World career.
The first stage of your DP World Tour career, because you are heading back there. Yeah. The career thereafter, we'll get in a sec. One of the things this did give you, winning in the Czech Republic, was clearly a love of the Czech Republic, because Prague was to become home.
Yeah, it was my home for, you know, 5 years. Obviously,
what was that, a prize? You win an apartment in Prague if you win the Czech Masters.
It was definitely something that I was thinking about in terms of, you know, finding a base in Europe. And you know, I'm sure as everyone knows, Europe is quite a costly beast. And you know, winning Czech Masters gave me the ability to be, you know, a honorary member at the golf club that I won, which is a huge help in terms of you know having somewhere to practice. And Prague is obviously a beautiful city, and also relatively cheap compared to the majority of Europe. So I found myself there, and I absolutely loved it. And the beer was good, and the weather was actually surprisingly good during the summer. So, you know, during the winter, we used to do the sort of South African swings or the Asian swings. So it wasn't too much of a decision.
The city is charming, and it is beautiful. It has much great beer. I think Pilsner Okol is about 40 minutes out of town. I remember going to visit and having a terrific time. I wouldn't say the food is always the subtlest or lightest.
No.
Big stews and loads of dumplings.
Yes.
But it is a very warm and comforting space. And it was obviously a very happy home for you, and you got to spend that time there. Is there always going to be part of Prague that sits in your heart?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I had some really good memories there. I haven't been there for some time now. But it is, you know, it is a city that, you know, I love to go to, and hopefully I can go again at some stage. The one thing I will say is that, you know, it was never quite like South Africa. South Africa has, you know, you talk about charm, it's just home, and that's where my heart is, and I think I'm here to stay.
Which does raise the question that, again, we mentioned at the start of the show, people tend to see golf through that prism of the television camera on a Sunday afternoon, and there is so much more to it. The life in Prague versus the life in South Africa, yes, it's great beer and loads of history and beautiful buildings and the river and the bridges, and there's so much to enjoy and to admire, but the sunshine is not quite the same. They don't do a lot of brying in Prague. Yeah. But also you don't have that comfort blanket. You don't have the security network of the friends and of the family. And I think golf, already quite a lonely sport, and that it's you and, to a degree, your caddy for a lot of the time, but you're on your own for a lot. You're traveling a lot, and not all the golfers are on private jets and living it up in penthouse suites. It can be a very attritional life to lead.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think with everything there comes sacrifice, and you know, as you say, golf can be lonely, especially when you're not playing the best. You know, you obviously forking out quite a lot of money to miss cuts, and you know, those sort of Friday evenings after a missed cut are probably some of the loneliest nights that you can have. I know it sounds a bit dark, but you know, we as professional golfers do, and sportsmen, probably take, you know, defeat quite badly, because, you know, we pour our heart and soul into what we do, and you know, being away from home, away from family and friends, is even more difficult. So I think that was a lot of the reason why I tried to move my base in Europe to find some sort of grounding, and I managed to find that. As I said, it wasn't quite the same as South Africa. No briars, no brandy, and you know, not quite the same understanding of how important rugby is to us.
It's a major downfall with the Czech Republic. To what degree did that then contribute to what was not the fairy tale thereafter, because you've now won two DP World Tour events back home. Everyone in South Africa is not, is Hayden going to win a major? It's when, because you really are in that space in the eyes of the South African golfing public. This is this electric young talent, and gee, he's going great places. And then you didn't. And the reality of golf is that this happens to a lot of people. Yeah, half of the players do not make the weekend in every tournament. We spoke at the event we were at the other day with John Smith. If John Smith had got five victories from his over 100 test matches, that would have been a very, very average rugby career for a Springbok captain. In fact, he never would have made 100 games. Whereas if you have five victories out of 100 golf tournaments, that's an extraordinary win ratio. And so you have to deal with a sport where, by and large, you are very rarely going to do as well as you want. And that's a very difficult space to navigate. And sadly, it was one that didn't, for you, play out thereafter anywhere quite like you would have wanted it to.
Yeah, I think it's a, it was a low, sort of long, slow process of, I don't really know how to explain it, but I, you know, as a kid, you know, everything I played in, I won. I then moved to sort of amateur golf. Everything I played in, I won. And then towards, you know, the beginning stages of my professional career, I won as well. So then starting to get this understanding that you're not going to win every single week was quite a shock to my mental side, because it was something that I wasn't quite used to. I think with that came a lot of inner chatter in the head, and you know that those voices in your head start to get louder and louder. And you know, next thing I knew, I was in quite a bad space in terms of, you know, where am I trying to go with my game? What am I trying to achieve? You know, what are realistic goals? But what goals do I want to put down that aren't too high, but not too low? And you know, all these thoughts started going through my mind, and that funneled into my golf, and a lot of, you know, sort of self-doubt, not understanding who I was as a golfer. These were, you know, some challenging questions that I needed to ask myself. And as we spoke about it earlier, is, you know, having these conversations with yourself so far away from home, it was difficult to find grounding. And you know, I still think, you know, all these bad things, or these, you know, sort of things that I didn't want to happen, were probably the greatest gift that I could have gotten, because I don't think I would have learned as much from winning as I have got from losing.
You almost wonder if the amateur, the junior career had been a little more difficult, it might have helped you going forward, because learning to lose and to come back from losing and to keep those voices quietly in the background is not an easy thing to do. And the more, we spoke in jest about thinking about your golf, but the more you start to analyze and wonder and question and query, it can become just harder and harder and harder to get back to somewhere that you know you can be, because you've proved it, but you're really struggling to find.
Yeah, it's just a snowball effect, you know. And I think the one thing that, you know, I can be very grateful for is the fact that, you know that I've done it before. So I knew that I had what it took. And I think that was a sort of that little silver lining that I knew that I could get back to it. And you know, all these disappointments have shaped me into who I am now, not as a golfer, but also as a person. And I think that is the most important thing for me right now. I think you know, I've started to find out what is really important in this life. And you know, recently getting married and having a baby is the meaning of my life. And you know, I like to sort of say that, you know, golf is what I do, and it's not who I am. So,
which is such an important distinction.
Yeah, it is. And it's I think, you know, sort of those voices that I had in the bad times, I think there was maybe a little bit too much emphasis on the fact that, you know, golf is who I am, and if I don't succeed, then who am I? You know, and I think that that was a huge step in the right direction for me to distinguish these two different things. And you know, I think there will always be disappointment on the golf course, and being able to pull yourself away from that disappointment and just enjoy the life that you have with your loved ones.
The sports person out of form is not unique. You see the batter who a year ago was reeling off hundreds and now is scratching about for three or four off 20 balls and then gets out. The centre forward who got 30 goals last season and now just cannot find the back of the net. And it's a painful thing to watch. To actually experience must be a really, really difficult one, because in the case of golf, it's week by week unfolding. And that process, and I hope I'm not putting your therapy back here by bringing all of this up, but I think there's so much just from in life that we can learn from this sort of story, where you're someone who's won not once but twice, you've won the Czech Republic, you're in this really great space. And then you start missing cuts and you're not making the weekend and the self-doubt is in there. And suddenly from, well, I've got the next few years ahead of me on the DP World Tour because I've won, I'm now losing my card. And then it's the Sunshine Tour and I'm losing my Sunshine Tour card. And this is an awful lot to go through. And again, this is not to go back and evoke all these terrible memories. For me, it is really to celebrate how well I know you have come back, and we will speak about that in a second, but going through that process and seeing everything you've built now come tumbling down, that's an awful lot to go through.
Yeah, it was a lot to take. It was almost like watching a car crash happen in slow motion. You know, everybody, you know, had that sort of optimism behind, you know, don't worry, it'll come. But deep down, I just felt like I wasn't in the right headspace to do so. And, you know, I remember a lot of evenings sort of lying in bed saying, you know, this is going to end up bad. You know, I can feel it. I don't feel like I'm enjoying the game enough to really pull myself out of this hole. And it was quite a difficult position to be in, you know, and quite hard on my mental side. And when I did lose my card, I almost felt like it had happened already, you know. So the disappointment was obviously there, but I knew it would happen. I know it sounds, you know, very, very pessimistic, but there was a lot of truth to it. I just wasn't enjoying the game, and you know, I really was finding it difficult to put in the hard yards, and I felt like I had very little direction. So, you know, when I flew back from Europe to South Africa, and you know, I remember having a conversation with my dad saying, you know, what do I do? You know, I've got no playing status anywhere. I'm not enjoying the game, you know. So even if I did have somewhere to play, I just am not enjoying it. So that was probably the most difficult part of my career. I felt like I'd lost my identity and lost the love for what I knew I was always going to love. So it was a really, really difficult position.
Falling out of love with being an accountant or a plumber or a construction worker, well, you know, at least you've got the weekends to hang out with your family and, you know, go and play golf and do the things that you like. When it is so all-encompassing, it does make it that more challenging. But sometimes you do need to hit rock bottom so you can start building back up. Not dissimilar conversation on the show last year with Brandon Stone, who'd had the highs of winning a Rolex Series event with the Scottish Open and then lost his card and was really struggling for direction. So what allowed you, having hit rock bottom, you've fallen out of love with golf, you're now considering, right, I'm going to go and, you know, manage a branch of Johnson's Workwear and find life away from golf and do something totally different.
Yes.
What allows you to find that love again?
So I think I think there was a huge part of my ego that was knocked during that whole period. And I think the fact that my ego was knocked gave me no expectation. And I think, you know, going from all the way from the top to the bottom and having nothing to prove to people gave me the freedom to go out there and just play for myself. And I think that was the biggest gift that I actually gave myself, was to start from zero again and work my way up. So, you know, a huge thanks to the Betway Big Easy to give me that opportunity to start again and you know, try and get myself back to where I know I can be. And I think it was a huge step in the right direction to just surrender the ego. It's
a big dose of humility, that, because from the guy who's playing with Henrik Stenson and knocking balls past Rory McIlroy on the driving range in Abu Dhabi, you're now arriving and you know that everybody else there knows where you were and where you are now. And that's a big one to wear.
It is. And, you know, I think the big thing that I kept telling myself is, you know, I deserve to be here. I'm on the same playing field as everybody here who's playing the Betway Big Easy. Obviously, I have my past, but at the end of the day, I'm here for a reason, and you know, I need to work just as hard as, you know, the 16 or 17 year old kid who's hungry to win trophies, and that's how I need to be. So it was a huge dose of humility, but in the same breath, a huge dose of an understanding of where I came from and where I need to start again.
You mentioned earlier getting married, becoming a dad, and the moment that fatherhood was mentioned when we played golf, you just lit up, which I loved seeing. The marriage part first, yeah, falling in love, finding somebody who has the ability to be that best friend, that counsellor, somebody who can take you through some pretty difficult times. That's a really special person to have.
Yes, and I mean, she has turned my world upside down, and I'm a terrible romantic. So, for me to say that is quite something. But you know, she's a strong woman. She actually works for Investec. So, you know, it's a pretty tough workspace that she's in, and when she comes home, she stays in that headspace. So she keeps me down the straight and narrow, and you know, she gives me a talking to when I need a talking to. But she also, you know, gives me a lot of comfort in you know, us as a family, and you know, to have someone around who always has my interest at heart is huge for me.
And to find somebody, and I really struggled with this, find somebody who's not only there because you hit the ball so long off the tee, because you're so effortless with a short game, you drain those 70-foot putts all the time. I can safely say my wife has no interest in anybody who can do that. But to find someone, because when you're a high-profile athlete, there are those people who, there's the superstar, this is really cool. To find someone where the meaning lies well beyond that. It's not that they don't appreciate what you do and admire it, but they know that that's just a small part of a far greater package.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's it goes back to what I was saying is, you know, golf is what I do and it's not who I am. And I remember the first time myself and my wife Nicole met.
How did you meet?
Well, we met at the Roof in Bryanston. I was a little bit worse for wear. It was a friend's birthday party. So I don't remember too much of the evening, but I do remember her, which is
the important
probably
part.
A good start.
Love at first sight?
Yeah, I could say that. Things moved pretty quick from then. We actually met the next day. I had a screaming hangover. And We actually ended up having a little game of paddle to try and sweat out the beer and all those things, but it was a really good time for me. And you know, the fact that, you know, a good friend of mine actually said to her that that I'm a really good golfer. I think she kind of understood that as I'm a really good weekend warrior. I don't think she had an idea that it was what I did for a job.
That there are streets named after you in the Czech Republic.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And then we said hello to our baby girl 6 months ago, Harley. And I thought golf was hard. raising a child is no joke. So, loving every minute of it. You know, every day brings something new. And you know, I think you know, we talk about, you know, finding something that pushes me forward. That's it.
There is no coincidence that married life, and if we look over the last 6 months, there have been some great performances. Zambia was really good. We've seen some of the old Hayden, and I have absolutely no doubt that the perspective that first marriage and now more importantly fatherhood has given you allows you to approach what you do with far more balance and with an understanding that the consequence is perhaps not as great as you might once have thought if things don't always go quite according to plan. And I love the fact that we can see those two working together, and that Hayden 2.0 has got this wonderful team where your priorities and your perspective are now so much more in keeping with what they should be.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to you about, you know, those Friday nights after missing a cut can be lonely. But now, you know, with this new perspective, you know, coming home on a Friday evening and seeing the little one, it changes your perspective a lot. And, you know, I think it's given me the freedom to go play golf, you know, on my terms and how I want to play golf and approach my game. Without being scared of a lonely Friday evening. So, you know, I think the one big thing that I'm starting to feel is that, you know, early on in the career, you know, I was very hit and miss. It was, you know, go big or go home. And, you know, I ended up winning a couple of times, but I didn't feel like I had the consistency behind me. And I think that was maybe a huge reason as to maybe why my career started to sort of slump a little bit, because, you know, we talk about winning and losing. I was losing a lot more than I was winning. So what's nice to see now in my game is that, you know, I won at Gowrie Farm, which, you know, Thomas was instrumental in that.
That's Thomas Abt, Sunshine Tour Commissioner. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Man.
And, you know, he gave me an invite to that event and I took it with both hands. So, but since then, you know, I've played really consistently. I've put myself into contention quite a few times, and unfortunately, not quite got over the line. But, you know, more and more building blocks are being put down, and, you know, hopefully, I can put myself in those situations a few more times.
We have spoken about quietening those voices in the background. You can quieten them. You can never entirely make them go away, though. And there is always going to be that voice that reminds you that you are Hayden Porteous, two-time and counting DP World Tour winner, and you know that you can do it. So in that context, as we look ahead to, say, the next 5 years, when, you know, you've had another five or six children and Nicole's CEO of Investec and the family is flourishing, what would happily represent for you a successful return to the kind of golfing world that you know you belong in, but for the last while haven't quite been part of?
So, you know, for me, it might seem very cliche, but for me, it's just about enjoying the game. You know, when I first started playing golf, I did it because I enjoyed it. I did it because I loved it. You know, it was that was the reason why I played. And if I can stay in that sort of mindset now for the next 5 years, I know that, you know, the world is my oyster, and with love comes a lot of effort and a lot of practice, and just a lot of good things will come from just enjoying something.
I've got to be honest, if you never made another cut again, as deeply disappointing it would be from a golf perspective, I still think you'd be a very complete and happy man in so many ways, because with Nicole and with Harley and with finding out what's really important to you, you've got a lot of balance that clearly wasn't always there. But that's not going to happen, because having played with you and being dazzled by the game that is there, we're going to be seeing an awful lot more of you, not just on the Sunshine Tour, where you are a very, very welcome addition, but also on broader tours, because there is too much golf greatness in there not to have the world benefit from it. And I shall be, along with many, many other South Africans, watching proudly from couches on Sunday afternoons as you storm around the world's tours and give us a taste of what once was, but what I have absolutely no doubt is to come again.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it.
So there we go. It's a salutary lesson on professional sport in general, on golf in particular, where so much of it looks so cool. They make all this money and they travel around the world and they're flying in jets and life is just amazing. Well, so often with golf, it's not. And it can be a real, real challenge that when you have somebody with the honesty to look at what has happened, what's gone wrong, and how to try and pick themselves back up from the very, very bottom, it really does make for an inspiring tale. And that is exactly the story of a man who I think we should really be referring to the show simply as Harley's dad. My guest on the Dan Nicholls Show this week, two-time DP World Tour winner for now, Hayden Porteous.
You're listening to the Dan Nicholls Show.